You're listening to the Jefferson Exchange. I'm Mike Green. My guest is Oregon's Secretary of State, Tobias Reed. We're focusing on an extremely important issue today, voting. I hope you'll give it your full attention. I'd like to set the stage for our discussion with some background, so bear with me. In 1865, in the aftermath of the Civil War, the United States was facing another inflection point. White radicals in Congress were asking themselves a quintessential question that was asked by the founders at the start of the nation. What will we do with black people? Unlike the founders, who determined black people could not be citizens of the whole United States and allowed for their enslavement by 8 of the original 13 states, the white radicals in 1865 introduced the first federally funded DEI program in American history. It was called the Freedmen's Bureau. And not only did the Freedmen's Bureau use congressional funds to center and prioritize the economic and political empowerment of black people in a white America, it was followed by the first Civil Rights Act in 1866, which would lead to a 14th Amendment to the Constitution in 1868 that extended U.S. citizenship and transformed newly freed black refugees into black Americans. It also transformed a formerly whites-only national citizenry into a more diverse, equitable, and inclusive America. The President of the United States at that time, Andrew Johnson, was so enraged that he sought to derail and destroy the Freedmen's Bureau. He was so angry that he gave a speech to Congress in 1867, and he said this, quote, "It is manifestly the object of these laws to confer upon Negroes the privilege of voting and to disenfranchise white citizens. The subjugation of the states to Negro domination would be worse than the military despotism under which they are now suffering. It is not proposed merely that they shall govern themselves, but that they shall rule the white race, make and administer state laws, elect presidents and members of Congress, and shape the future destiny of the whole country. The great interests of the country require immediate relief from these enactments. Business in the South is paralyzed by a sense of general insecurity and the dread of Negro supremacy," end quote. Congress impeached President Andrew Johnson in 1868 after he fired the man in charge of the Freedmen's Bureau. Johnson survived the trial by one vote, but could not stop the 14th Amendment from being ratified later that year. And so, on Christmas Day, 1868, the first U.S. president to ever be impeached signed a blanket pardon for all white Americans who participated in the violent insurrection against the United States. And in the aftermath of that pardon, black Americans were targeted with extreme violence for more than a century. And every effort to participate in the political process was met with institutional hostility. 100 years after passing the Freedmen's Bureau, Congress tried again to reinforce the Constitution with a Voting Rights Act in 1965. And again, we witnessed the response of a violently hostile white America. Today, we're only 8 generations from President Johnson's infamous speech about the fear of Negro rule in America, and only 3 generations from the time when police brutalized the late Congressman John Lewis on the Edmund Pettus Bridge in Selma, Alabama. Today, we have another president who was also impeached, expressing eerily similar concerns to Andrew Johnson and seeking to control the voting process in America over the objections of a number of states whose laws have supported voting as a fundamental right guaranteed by the Constitution. Oregon is one of those states that has made voting easier and more efficient. And during the 2020 COVID pandemic, when voting in person was compromised, voting by mail was not. Today, mail-in voting is under threat by the Trump administration. Joining the exchange to help us better understand how Oregon is responding to the threat is Secretary of State Tobias Reed. Welcome to the exchange, Secretary Reed.
Thank you, Mike. It's good to be with you again.
So last week, you wrote an op-ed that was published by national media. You defended Oregon's vote-by-mail system. What's your argument?
Well, I want to first start by appreciating the context you provided, because this, I think, is just another example of how we're trying to make it more convenient for people to vote and hold politicians accountable. you made the case really articulately. We are stronger. We are a better state. We are a better country when more people get to participate. So the argument is that this is an example of what our president is consistently trying to do right now, which is avoid accountability. He does not want to have to stand in front of the American people, in front of Oregonians, and defend what he and his administration have and have not done. On top of that, he is very clearly forgetting the oath that he swore to uphold the Constitution. It says clearly in Article 1, Section 4, that states have the responsibility of running elections, not the president through executive order. And finally, in his latest bit of showmanship, he did us a favor. He said in his own words on an interview that he was taking advice from Vladimir Putin about how to run elections. If the president is taking that advice, we have to question it. We know that Vladimir Putin is a person who has successfully rigged elections in his own country. So I think that is strong evidence for us that it's something we want to defend. And ultimately, the most important thing here, voting by mail is secure, it is accurate, it is fair, and Oregon does not need outsiders telling us what to do when it comes to our own elections.
How many states use vote by mail systems?
Well, it's an interesting question because there are different ways of answering that. There are several that use mail-in elections exclusively. There are others that offer voters various forms of that option, whether it's through absentee or permanent absentee. And every state uses a form of it because, remember, as I think the president seems to have forgotten, our military service members who are deployed vote by mail when they are deployed. So everyone has some exposure to this.
Well, I was in the military for 12 years, so I'm familiar with that.
There you go. Thank you for your service.
My guest is Oregon Secretary of State Tobias Reed. We're talking about the Trump administration's efforts to eliminate mail-in voting in Oregon and across the country. So, Secretary Reed, PBS reported that nearly 30% of Americans voted by mail in the 2024 election. And during the COVID pandemic, that number was up to 43%, according to data from bipartisanpolicy.org. And in 2020, voting by mail surpassed voting in person for the first time nationwide. And that just so happens to be the same election that the Trump administration claims was stolen from him. Your thoughts?
Well, the other thing to add to your good observation is that the president himself voted by mail. And even in the 2024 campaign, he was talking about the advantages of voting by mail. Voting by mail does not benefit one party over another. What it does benefit is people who live a long distance from a voting center, someone who might be elderly, someone who is working an hourly job. It works because it meets people where they are, in their living rooms, around their kitchen tables, and we should be doing everything we can to make it convenient for eligible people to vote. Everything else in the economy and in the world moves in that direction, trying to fit into complicated, busy lives. When it comes to something as fundamental as voting, an American right, we should not be moving in the opposite direction. And I think we have to just make that clear again and again and again. Oregonians know this. That's why voting by mail is popular here. That's why we've been doing it for 25 years. It's why we've elected Republicans and Democrats and independents who vote by mail, and why I think Oregonians want to keep it.
Well, in all fairness, there seems to be a fear, some sort of motivating, whether it be rational or irrational, but there's some sort of motivating fear that is galvanizing support on the Republican side of the aisle behind President Trump and this effort to rid the nation of mail-in voting. What is the fear?
I can't necessarily articulate what the fear is, but I think it is definitely started. It has started with the president trying to justify his loss. He won't admit it, of course, but he's trying to explain things. He's trying to continue to make the case that he didn't lose. And he's scared of American people holding him accountable. He knows that his actions and his programs and his policies are not popular. So there is just no denying that there's fear. But I think the fear here comes from the president. And and it's associated with him having to face the election. That's why I'm trying to pull back the curtain on this process. We've been doing a number of ballot ride-alongs with election officials across the state leading up to the May election, where people can see what happens when they turn their ballots in. I think people feel good when they can see all of the controls, all of the security that's involved. Our system is a gold standard. It's a paper ballot. It's verified with forensic analysis of signatures. People from two different parties look at the ballot to make sure that the vote is recorded accurately. And after the fact, we can audit those results. One person gets one vote, one ballot. This is what we should be aspiring to all along. So I think the fear, as with many things, comes from the unknown, and everything we can do to pull back that curtain and help people understand what's going on behind the scenes, I think that really helps. This is this is just sort of politics. It is not reality.
Okay, so to your point, the ballots are checked by both parties. Well, here in Oregon, we have both parties. What's the Republican Party here in Oregon saying about our system?
Well, I would let them speak for themselves. I'm a Democrat, but more importantly, I'm a Secretary of State for every Oregonian, and my goal is to make sure that everyone has a chance to participate and make their choices, their preferences clear through a ballot that is secure, that is fair, that is accurate. It's fundamental to who we are as Americans and Oregonians to have the freedom to vote, and that means making it convenient for people, for eligible people to fit this process into their lives. You should not have to drive a long distance. You shouldn't have to get a babysitter. I mean, think about somebody think about a single mom in a rural part of the state. This is maybe outside of the southern Oregon. I always think about Enterprise, where I was recently. In the fall, those could be icy roads. That single mom might have to get a babysitter. She might have to give up time at her hourly job, and then she's got to stand in line. None of this makes any sense. We have to make sure that people can vote in a way that works for them.
Well, I find it ironic that here in Oregon, people who are elected by mail-in vote would stand against that process. That makes no sense.
Yeah,
to me.
There is a certain inconsistency to say that my election is okay, but everyone else's is not. You're right.
So the Brookings Institution produced a state-by-state national scorecard back in November 2020, grading each state based on its level of preparedness for voting under pandemic conditions. Oregon received an A, along with California and seven others. Nearly all of the southern states receive grades of C, D, or F. What do you imagine might happen to the voting process in the case of a declared state of emergency?
I think we have to be prepared for all kinds of disruptions. And I appreciated your mention of John Lewis in the intro. He said something else that echoes in my mind all the time, that democracy is not a state, it's an act. And we cannot take these things for granted. The president's effort here clearly exceeds his authority, but we can't just let it happen. We have to be prepared for disruptions of all sorts, whether that's wildfires and potential earthquakes in Oregon or policy threats like we are seeing right now. I don't know what would happen in a southern state, but I know that there are election officials, local election officials, throughout Oregon. I've been on a tour. I've met with 30 of the 36 county clerks in Oregon, and I assume the same is true around the country. The people who are the heroes of democracy, carrying out the hard work of maintaining voter rolls and counting ballots, who are committed to doing the right thing. And that's the key. It's not about what the president says. It's about individual people, individual Americans voting, and individual county clerks and election officials making sure that we're protecting that right. Citizens not being able to exercise their freedom to vote is the greatest threat, and we will always use every tool we have to defend against that possibility.
Do we know what percentage of Oregonians, and I know we've got to go in about 30 seconds, do we know what percentage of Oregonians are in favor of keeping our system?
We have one good piece of evidence. There was a bill proposed in the Oregon legislature to do away with mail-in voting. It got the most testimony in the history of the legislature. 85% of the people who testified said they wanted to keep mail-in voting.
Wow, 85%. Okay, we need to take a short break. My guest is Oregon Secretary of State Tobias Reed. I'm Mike Green. You're listening to the Jefferson Exchange on the News and Information Service of Jefferson Public Radio. You're listening to the Jefferson Exchange. I'm Mike Green. My guest is Oregon Secretary of State Tobias Reed. We're talking about the Trump administration's efforts to eliminate mail-in voting in Oregon and across the country. Before the break, Secretary Reed, you said 85% of Oregonians support mail-in voting. That's astounding.
Well, it's 85% of the people who testified against this bill. It's the best evidence we have presently, but you know, everywhere I go around Oregon, the vast majority of people I talk to are really clear about it because it's a nonpartisan issue. This does not favor one party or the other. It just allows people to fit the fundamental act of voting into their daily lives. It's secure, it's accurate, it's fair. People know that. And I think people are used to the idea of commerce and daily life getting more convenient over time. There are a lot of things we used to have to go stand in line to take care of that we can take care of in more convenient, remote ways, and that's what we do with voting as well. You know, I tell a story because it's true. When I meet with other secretaries of state around the country, they say, you know, tell me about this mail-in voting stuff, and I look at them with a deadpan face and say, I don't know what you're talking about. In Oregon, we just call it voting. We've been doing it for 25 years here. We do it because it works, and we're going to keep doing it.
Well, when Trump first became president, following the 2016 election, he was accused of intentionally defunding the Postal Service. Then he appointed one of his major campaign donors, Louis DeJoy, as Postmaster General. And The Nation magazine wrote in 2020 an in-depth article titled, quote, "Donald Trump and his Postmaster General are sabotaging democracy in plain sight," end quote. Now the subtitle reads, quote, "The president blurted out his determination to undermine voting rights in a Fox Business Network interview," end quote. So, Secretary Reed, this goes way back. This has been a deliberate attempt that's, as The Nation put it, is happening in plain sight. What are the states arguing in court?
Well, we've got a lot of things going on in court presently. I think you made a couple of good points in that observation. One is the central role of the Postal Service. That's a fundamental feature of democracy recognized by the founders, and we have to fight for that. The relationship is central to the way we carry things out. But it's also important for people to realize that that's not the only way to participate in our system. You can drop off your ballot at a county drop box and be 100% certain that it will be counted because it doesn't have to travel through the mail. So I encourage people to remember that there are pieces there are drop boxes all over various counties. We're also in court to challenge the president's previous executive order because it is also unconstitutional and illegal. There are a number of states doing that. In fact, one of the other challenges resulted in an injunction. We are partnering with the state of Washington on our particular challenge. They, like us, do mail-in elections. Our challenge is still in legal process. But Oregonians should know. I can assure you, and I can assure every Oregonian, we are going to use every tool at our disposal to make sure that the president is not able to hide his attempt to rig elections. We're going to make sure that people understand and that Oregonians have the chance to participate the way we have chosen. That's what the Constitution says, and we will defend it.
Well, can the Republicans, who were elected by mail-in vote, can they be helpful in persuading the president that this is an efficient and effective system?
I sure hope so. They should absolutely do that. They should stand by their constituents. they should be able to talk credibly about the system that elected them. And I'm standing by to help them if they need evidence, if they want any of those kinds of stats. If they are honest, they know that our system of elections is secure, it's fair, it's accurate, it's the gold standard.
My guest is Oregon Secretary of State Tobias Reid. Secretary Reid, funding is a major source of power that the Trump administration is leveraging to its advantage. Can political purse strings be used to undermine the integrity of the voting process in Oregon?
Well, I would say to a certain extent, the president is already trying to do this. I've visited a number of county clerks, as we've talked about, and I'm thinking particularly about one in your region now, who talked about one of her proud accomplishments. And this says something, too. She talked about the installation of bulletproof glass in her office. The fact that she had to do that is alarming enough. But then she paused almost without a breath and said, but there's still a gap at the top of that bulletproof glass between that and the ceiling where someone could throw an incendiary over. Her ability to do that installation was the result of a federal grant. And now the president is trying to threaten those grants if counties and states don't follow his preferences around the way we hold up elections. That is not the way to do this. If they are serious about election integrity, they would be making those grants more available. Certainly, if we moved away from mail-in elections, things would get more expensive. It would cost multiples more to carry out in-person elections. It's less convenient. It's less secure. It's all of those things. So not only does it cost more, it's less effective, and the president is threatening things in a way that belies the true intention of what he's trying to do.
Well, if it's more expensive to move or transition away from an efficient and effective mail-in voting system to an inefficient and ineffective in-person system, and it's more expensive, where does that money come from?
It would be required, I think, from the states, probably. It's a great question, and in fact, I think it's all of a piece of what the Trump administration is doing right now. Who pays tariffs? It's us. It's Oregonians. It's Americans. What is the plan for a bill? I don't call it beautiful. That finances tax cuts for billionaires. We don't really care about those details, apparently. If they really cared about these questions, they'd be providing funding for elections. We need the money for security, but they are cutting that, and I think it's reprehensible.
Well, this scenario seems like a slow-moving train wreck that we're all witnessing, generation after generation.
Yeah, it's a good comparison, an apt comparison, I should say. Voting by mail is the way we should be going. Moving away from it is not good. Slow motion, I think, is a good description. But we are, we're pushing against that. That is our obligation. It's the oath I took. It's one I take seriously. And you and everyone can be assured that I'm putting everything I have into that, because this is who we are as Oregonians. We want people to participate. We're stronger when that happens, and we'll do everything we can to protect people's right to hold politicians accountable.
Okay, so let's talk solutions. One of the challenges we have nationwide, not just here in Oregon, but all over the country, is widespread ignorance about the civic process, which naturally leads to ambivalence and apathy among the electorate. How can civic knowledge be addressed in Oregon?
I think it's up to all of us, and conversations like the one we're having right now are a great start. Each of us has the ability in our daily lives to interact with people, so I always encourage people to engage with people wherever the opportunity presents itself. There is plenty of room to have good, civil, productive disagreements about what government is doing and how to do it better. But I don't think any reasonable person can doubt that government plays a role in our lives, that we are better off by the provision of services that we all use, whether it's drinking water or fire protection or common schools, all of that sort of stuff matters. And so, you know, if you're standing in line at the grocery store, if you're waiting for a bus, you engage with people, ask them what they like and what they dislike. We have to get better at disagreeing with each other in productive and civil ways, and encouraging people, hey, you've got ideas. I might not agree with them, but you should express them. And in Oregon, we're so lucky to have a convenient way to do that. When the ballot comes to you, all you've got to do is fill it out and get it back, and your preferences will be counted. That's a wonderful thing, and we shouldn't take it for granted, and we've all got a role to help celebrate and promote it.
Well, people tend to tune out politics and not realizing that politics is about policy making. And
yes.
The policy making affects us all, and we all have a duty to ensure that our ideas and what we want in society is represented by our policy makers, and that's through the voting process. Now, there is this racial component that's ingrained in our electoral system and our voting patterns. For example, in the last three presidential elections, the majority of only one demographic supported Trump, according to all of the voting data that I've seen, and that's white men and women, 60% of white men and 53% of white women. Meanwhile, more than 90% of black women, who are the largest non-white voting demographic, stood adamantly opposed to Trump. Now, this racial division follows the historic pattern in voting that we talked about earlier. Why is this not part of the national discourse?
Well, I think it is. I certainly hear that that observation made in various places. I think ultimately we've all got an opportunity to talk about the direct effect that policies are having in our daily lives. I particularly liked your point that policy is manifesting in the experiences we have. The cuts that the federal government is proposing, well, it had passed in that big bill, are really going to come home when people realize that they won't have access to health care in the same way, that all kinds of programs and services on which we have come to rely simply won't be there. And part of our role, I think, is to make that connection clear, that for however much people are turned off by the discussion of politics, it's real. It's immediate. It's what our daily lives are turning out to be as a result of those policies. So those of us who end up in roles as election officials should be focused on making sure that everyone has the right to vote, the freedom to do that, and the freedom to express their satisfaction or dissatisfaction with the direction of the policies that are made by people we are voting for or against.
And those policies have real-world impact. I mentioned
yes,
that more than 90% of black women stood adamantly opposed to President Trump, while 53% of white women voted for him. Well, the result of that is that just in the last 6 months, more than 300,000 black women have been unemployed, lost their jobs because of the policies of this administration. So they lost the battle at the polls, and then they lost their jobs. That's real.
It is real. And I would suggest not to diminish that point it's consequences everywhere. I mean, not only do people lose their jobs, they're losing their health care. And that's true for people in every geographic dimension and every demographic dimension. And that's really, I think, an opportunity for us to talk about how the fact that elections have consequences. And historically, the people who are disenfranchised get hit the hardest. We have to fight back against that. We have to make sure that everyone is showing up and is voting in ways that will promote the long-run interest, not short-term.
And now our children are at risk because the Department of Education is going away. And
right.
A lot of the funding for programs, whether it be DEI programs or healthcare programs or a number of different programs that affect our children, are being defunded.
Yeah. Yeah. The idea that we are emphasizing this short-term, short-sighted attitude, it definitely hurts the future. People not having a strong start with education, not having an infrastructure that allows them to live up to their full potential, We're taking from our kids right now in order to fund tax cuts for billionaires. That is, I can say this as a former state treasurer, that is a bad investment.
Okay, well, we have about 30 seconds left, and unfortunately, this is a huge issue. What can the public do in Oregon to ensure we safeguard our electoral process?
We can vote. We can show up. We can make sure that our election information is accurate and up to date. We can make sure that our signatures are up to date. We can tell everybody else in Oregon and around the country we know how to do this. We know how much stronger we are when we are participating. You can check all your information at OregonVotes.gov /myvote and participate. Stay engaged. Stay with us and keep listening to public radio.
Okay, I love that. Thank you, Mr. Secretary.
Thank you, Mike.
My guest was Oregon Secretary of State Tobias Reed.